Bristol, For the Record, a new local oral history podcast from BCFM Radio in partnership with MShed Bristol and funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund.
Easton Cowboys and Cowgirls are a community sports and social club based in East Bristol. Beginning with the formation of a football team in 1992, the club now includes six men's and a women's football team, three netball teams, a club for kids and families, and a whole legion of ex-players and non-sporting members. All members of the club share the following core values, that is, anti-racist, anti-sexist, anti-fascist, anti-homophobic, and anti-transphobic. And one long-standing member is local artist Zoe Gibbons, to tell us more.
Hello.
Hi, Zoe. To kick things off, why is sport, and more specifically football, important to you?
Okay, so when I was a girl, a child, about 8-10 years old, I wanted to play football and I used to have a kick around in the playground with the boys in the breaks. And then I wanted to play football and there weren't any women's football teams. So as a child and as a young woman, I'd always played hockey, never football, because there was no chance to. And when I was living in Bristol back in 2002, a friend told me about a newly formed women's football team. And I was really happy about it because it meant that finally I was going to have a chance to play some football.
Why were you not allowed to play football when you were younger?
There just wasn't the women's teams and it was perceived to be a boys' sport. So when I was 10 years old and I wanted to play, I went to my head teacher and I asked if I could join in with the boys' practice. So they actually let me, but I moved around a lot as a kid. So I was there for about 2 months playing football and then that was it until I was 26 years old. Yeah. Actually, when I came to Bristol, I came to Bristol University and a mixed football session was advertised in like kind of the Freshers' Week. And I thought, brilliant, this is the chance for me to go and play football. So I went along, turned up to it and there were 76 blokes and I was the only female that came. So, again, I was like, okay, right, there just isn't the provision for me to be able to play football as a woman. And I would have always been happy to have played with men. I didn't mind that. You know, I started doing that when I was younger, but I wasn't allowed to. You know, the rules were set up that kind of men and women couldn't play in mixed teams. So there just wasn't the chance to.
Of all the sports and activities in the world, why football?
I think part of it for me was I quite like challenging the gender stereotypes. So I quite like I like playing pool and I like kind of, you know, those things that are sometimes considered to be things that guys are good at. Yeah, so it was partly that. It was partly because as a game, it's something you can just kind of do very easily anywhere. It's kind of, you know, all you need is a ball and you could have one person or you can have 50 people. You can still have a kick around and play it. So I've always really liked that element of it. And then there's the camaraderie of it. That team sport where you're kind of all together and you're kind of focusing on kind of something together. Yeah, so it's just I've just always thought that it's a really nice sport to play. It's very accessible if you're not female and kind of the age that I was. And it's great fun.
Tell us more about you joining the Easton Cowgirls football team. You know, when did it happen, how and why?
Okay, so when I was 26 years old, my husband grew up in Bristol and a friend of his that he went to school with told me that she'd just started going to a women's football practice. And I was really happy because, as you know, what I've said, I tried kind of through the years to be able to join in and hadn't been able to. So I went along and I think at the time the Easton Cowgirls, they were about 5-6 months old. So they'd recently formed. And they were training in what was St. George's, so before the academy was kind of rebuilt and renamed. So we started off there in the sports hall there. And there was, I don't know, about somewhere between 10 and 20 of us that were kind of regularly training. A couple of the cowboys were leading the training. And it was really great to eventually be able to play some football with some other women. And the massive bonus as well about the values of the cowboys and the cowgirls and what they stood for kind of really fitted in with the ethos that I had as well.
Because the Eastern Cowboys and Cowgirls, it's more than just a sport and social club, isn't it? You do lots of initiatives and events for social change, right? Can you tell us more about that?
100%. So the team itself formed, like the men's team formed 10 years earlier, and it kind of formed slightly out of reaction to what was happening within football at the time, the kind of racism that was rife within the sport. Kind of, it's kind of got a slightly punk background to it. And so the primary focus of the team has always been around the love of football and other sports, because we have lots of other sports in it, but also based around the idea of kind of equality of people of all genders and races and orientations, and everybody being able to play sport, but also that sport is a starting point for having conversations with other people and fostering understanding. So we've travelled all over, and kind of the sport, the football is the start point, but that's definitely not the end point. It kind of goes on into understanding each other in community and also trying to kind of drive change and equality. I mean, I don't want to make it sound too grand, you know what I mean? We're a football team, but it's about trying to make society a bit fairer, but on a local level. So completely grassroots, you know? We often say, like, you know, we play sport for an hour, but we might socialise for 12. So we're not the most, you know, fit and healthy team, but it's about kind of balance, I guess, in terms of people and their lives and trying to make things as kind of fair for each other as possible.
Can you describe the Bristol football scene now and in the past, how you've witnessed it?
So I can talk about the women's football side of it. I don't know the men's so well. So going back to 2002, when we first started playing the Eastern Cowgirls. So in 2002, we would be able to play in tournaments. So the Eastern Cowboys and Cowgirls is part of an anti-fascist network of clubs in Europe, and they take it in turns to host a tournament around Europe each year. So as part of that, with the Eastern Cowgirls, I was always able to play some sport within that tournament. Within Bristol at the time, back in 2002, 2003, there was a women's five-a-side league. But what we found is that you go along to it and that you'd have kind of women that used to play for Bristol Rovers or Bristol City, and they were really, really good. And you go along and you kind of pay £7 to be beaten like 32-2 or something. And it was just like really demotivating. So for 8 years, we were kind of playing football as training. And then we were also trying to play in some of these five-a-side leagues, which felt like they didn't quite cater for our needs. And we've been talking for a long time about wanting to create more opportunities for, quite selfishly, for us to be able to play more games. And then in about 2011, I met a woman called Julia Williams, who's a football development officer, and also play for a team called the Misfits. And so we started talking about trying to form a women's league in Bristol. As part of that, I spoke to Red Star, which is a Bedminster team, and Red Star formed the men's casual league in Bristol. So I had a conversation with them about how they did it, kind of the way that the league was structured. And from that, we came up with the idea of it being seven aside, because we felt that to try and form a new team of 11 would be massive. We also came up with the idea of it being not every week, because we felt that a lot of women would struggle to do a weekly commitment. And we also came up with the idea of it being played in one location, so teams weren't trying to find venues to play the game in, because often it can be very difficult for pitch accessibility, especially if you're a new team. So in 2012, we started the Bristol Women's Casual Football League. Just five teams. So the long answer to the short question is, yeah, kind of from 2002 to 2012, there weren't that many playing opportunities as a woman in Bristol. But from 2012, the Bristol Women's Casual Football League started with five teams. And we just had our 10th anniversary last year, so 2022. And the league's now up to 30 women's teams across three divisions.
Wow.
So it's amazing, like, how much it's grown in that time. And so now every 3 weeks at BBA, hundreds of women playing sport. And it's just fantastic to see all these women playing football together.
And tell us more. How's it going?
So I'm getting a bit of an old lady these days with other commitments. So I've stepped back from being so involved in the organising committee. But there's an amazing group of women who run the league. It's completely volunteer run. It is currently associated with the FA, but it's completely in our control if we want to do that or not. I have quite a lot of views about the FA from the fact that it banned women's football for 50 years, which I'm happy to talk about. So, you know, being affiliated with the FA has kind of helped with kind of integrating it within the kind of women's game as a whole. And women are very supportive of each other kind of playing football. So in the early days of the league being formed, Siobhan Chamberlain, who was like an England goalkeeper at the time, came along to the league to kind of as an ambassador and to say hello. And I remember thinking I couldn't imagine that happening with, like, you know, the men's England goalkeeper coming to some little, you know, sports afternoon social kind of thing. So I think the women's game's been very supportive of each other, which has been amazing. And, you know, obviously, as it is at the moment with the Lionesses' win last year in the Euros, like, the women's game has got this momentum and this positivity. And, like, for a young girl now, if she wants to play, like, most schools now have, like, teams for girls to play in. There's loads and loads of opportunities. So I can only see it growing. And, you know, I believe that young women now won't have the same barriers that a lot of us had when we were younger, which is fab.
Why did the FA ban women playing football?
Well, that's a big question. Who knows their exact reason? I can speculate. But yeah,
please do.
Yeah. So the history of women's football, as I think, is becoming fairly common now, knowledge. But for a long time, it was a very hidden history. So in the First World War, there was a lot of women's football teams based often in munitions factories where women were working whilst men were out in the trenches in the First World War. These women formed football teams, and there was hundreds of them. There was like over 150, I think, women's football teams at the time. The women's game was very popular. It was very well attended. So all these people that say that nobody wants to go and watch a women's game of football is very wrong. The game was in like 1920, a Boxing Day match between two women's teams up in the north of England, drew in a crowd of 53,000 people with another 14,000 who couldn't get in outside. But what they did was they raised money, so it was charitable. So the entrance and the money that they raised went to different causes. So it's the equivalent of millions of pounds in today's money. But the kind of causes they supported were things like miners' strikes. So if you kind of contextualize it in the history of the day, you have these women in kind of men's jobs doing kind of a slightly male sport, raising lots of money for quite socialist causes. And at the time, you also had the Russian Revolution going on. So it's quite possible the powers that be decided that they needed to squash all of these workers getting kind of these high ideals about what they may be able to do and changing society. So basically, the long and the short of it is, less than a year after that massive game of 53,000 people supporting it, the FA banned women's football. So in 1921, women's football was banned by the FA, which meant that women couldn't play a game on any FA ground. So it effectively stopped the game because women couldn't play in a way that would allow them access to pitches. So within 10 years from having over 150 teams, there was probably about, you know, 30 teams left. So a lot of teams folded. And the ban lasted for 50 years. So the ban was from 1921 until 1971. So, you know, I'm now in my late 40s. So when I was 10, going back to when I was 10 and I wanted to play, that was in 1975. So that was 4 years after the FA had lifted the ban. And the thing about anything that's banned is that the infrastructure isn't there anymore. So it takes a really long time to start to build the infrastructure again. So it's taken us 40 years to start building up the infrastructure to allow people to participate and also to allow people to come and start watching again. So we're getting there now.
And how do you view the actions of the FA nowadays? The Football Association, by the way, for those that don't know.
I'm very much about grassroots participation. For me, it's about the kind of bottom up. One of the reasons that Bristol Women's Casual Football League has been a success is it was designed by women for themselves. So we were able to design and shape things that would cater for our needs. The issue for me with the FA is it's a very top-down organisation. So yeah, it's great if you're in the elite side of the sport. But I personally don't think that a lot of the time they really understand the needs of people who are just wanting to play it for fun and some of the barriers that they may face. And so personally, I would really like to see far more genuine engagement with people about what their needs are and trying to build something that is accessible for individuals based on what they need. So, for example, it not being every single week, or for example, it being based in a convenient location, or for example, it not being really expensive. And so the benefit that we've always had is because we're volunteer run, we're not trying to make money out of it. We're kind of, you know, interested in creating opportunities for ourselves to play. You know, our ambitions are different to perhaps what the ambitions of an established kind of brand or big kind of organization are.
With the Bristol Women's Casual League and women playing football in general, have you had any reaction from blokes, from men about what you do?
I would say that the reaction has been really positive. I mean, I don't go and stand in the terraces on a men's game. And quite frankly, I'm afraid to say I'm not that interested in watching the men's game. Because for me, the men's game, like on a local level, yeah, but on kind of like a Premier League level, the money in it is frankly like disgusting. The reason that I like football is, you know, to play it and for the kind of the local kind of social element of it. So I'll go back to what you were asking about the men's. Yeah, the reaction within our club's been really positive. There's been loads of guys that are just so happy that the women's game is increased so much and it has the visibility it has. The most amazing thing was during the Euros last year, watching the plough absolutely full to the brink with loads of women and loads of guys and the interest in the women's game and the realization that, like, you know, it is a good game to watch. I think it's often like this, I mean, it's coming, but there's slightly less kind of going on in the women's game. It kind of, you know, the in the elite side, I mean.
It's coming.
I do think it's coming, you know. We'll see in another 5 years' time if there's a lot more diving. But
you mentioned the Plough Pub there. What's the attachment, the role of the Plough Pub in Eastern Cowboys and Cowgirls Sport and Social Club?
For as long as I've been part of the Cowboys and Cowgirls, or sometimes it's called the Cow Folk now, very controversial in some of the old punks. Some of the old punks don't like it, but the Eastern Cow Folk, it's easier to say. So the Plough has been a pub that we've always been based from. So it's after a game where we go back to have some food and to meet all the other teams that have been playing that day and to socialise. In the last 10, 15 years, it's been co-owned by Angelo, who is an Eastern Cowboy and has been part of the Cowboys for many years. And Tom, who doesn't play, but is very, very much around the values of the club. And I mean, the pub in itself is just this amazing, like, energy of community organisation. I mean, the veg box scheme, like over 50,000 boxes of veg in lockdown to people, and amazing program of music and championing local artists. The pub's great. It's got, and I must say as well that within the Casual Football League, the Women's Casual Football League, most of the teams that play in that league are affiliated to a pub. So there'll be the Misfits are at the Green Bank and then the Lilies are at a different pub. So often pubs are kind of that kind of social hub of a team for their kind of their post-match debriefing and wind down.
I'm wondering, with your time at the club, what have some of the most amazing experiences and stories that you can tell us?
I've been lucky enough to travel a bit with the club. So I've been to South America. I went and played football in Brazil and Argentina. I've also been and played in Palestine with the club, and then also around Europe as well, in Germany and Italy. So that opportunity to travel, like, I had fairly young children. So for me, the other thing that's been great about being an Eastern cowgirl is I've been Zoe, and I've not been like mum and all those other hats you wear when you kind of, you know, you're a parent or you're doing other things. So the opportunity to go away to South America and to be there for 3 weeks and to play football and to meet all these amazing people in South America that were playing football in a very similar way, in a kind of, you know, social grassroots, socially and ethically responsible kind of way, was just amazing.
I mean, what were you doing out there in some of these places? Surely you weren't just playing football. Were there some sort of collaboration in terms of initiatives and projects, causes?
Yes, yeah. So if we take Palestine, we organised, we've been to Palestine, the Eastern Cowgirls have been to Palestine twice, and the Eastern Cowboys, I think, have been three times now. And so when we went on the first trip to Palestine with the women's team, which was, I think, about 6 or 7 years ago, we also, as part of it, went to a women's sewing cooperative. We visited a kindergarten. We played against other women's teams out there, which was just amazing. Like, one of the teams we played, it was their first ever game. We visited villages in the West Bank and kind of witnessed some of the issues that there were kind of around the whole problem there is there between the Israeli occupation of some of the villages in the West Bank. We given like a tour around Hebron, which was the city that we were based and staying. And yeah, the people we met were just amazing. Like, it was such a privilege to go somewhere and to play football. And again, like I was saying, like, playing football was the starting point. That was the kind of reason we were there, but it was like the starting point. And then from that point on, we were going into people's houses and meeting them and sharing food with them and talking with them. It was just fantastic.
And doing your time with the Eastern Cowboys and Cowgirls, do you have any funny stories or anecdotes?
Yes. Yeah, so when we were in Palestine, we played the under-19 Palestinian women's team, which was amazing. We played in stadium in Ramallah under a massive image of Yasser Arafat. And at the end of the game, we had both scored 3 goals. But 2 of ours were in our own net, so it was actually 5-1 we lost. But the next day, we were in a cafe in Jerusalem, and one of the women spotted a man reading a paper. And on the back of the paper, it had our image, the photo we'd had taken the day before, but it was all in Arabic. And so we were really excited, and we kind of bought some copies of the paper, and we took them to somebody and said, like, you know, what does it say? And this person started reading it and started laughing. And we were like, why are you laughing? And they said, it says the old women of England come to play football.
Wow.
And we were like, so do you mean like a veterans team? And they laughed and they said, no, an old women's team.
Well, at least you made the local press.
We did. Yeah, we still got it framed.
It sounds like a sporting utopia. Surely there's some lows, right? Surely there's been some challenging times over the years.
There's a number of different ways in which it can be really difficult. As a female, quite honestly, even though we say that we're a club who is about equality for all, when I was first part of the club and we'd have these international tournaments, the women's game would often be, the pitch would be the pitch. It would be the one where if some children wanted to play, they'd be like, oh yeah, you can go play with the women. It was programmed differently. So we have still, even within people who kind of say they're all about equality, we still have had to not fight, but kind of strive to having kind of an equal representation and visibility and being taken seriously. Personally, like, I've had a lot of injury, and so a lot of the injury that I've had is because I was organizing like the women's casual league. So I'd be there, and rather than warming up, I'd be having to deal with any issues that there might be for the pitch that day. And I'm sure that's why I got a lot of injuries. And then when we've traveled and we've been away, I mean, you know, when we were in Palestine, we saw some really distressing things, and it was a real roller coaster in terms of the experience and the kind of genuine kind of, you don't want to just be there as a voyeur, you know, and you start kind of realizing some of the realities for some of the communities you're visiting, and your kind of the understanding that you have and start to develop is probably a lot of the reason why when you come back to Bristol, it's like, okay, we can't just stop that and leave that and now just go to the pub and forget about it. Like, we have a duty to share what we've learned and to share the stories of people to try and strive for more kind of fair treatment for everybody.
Looking forwards for Bristol and football in general, and then more specifically for women's football, how do you see things progressing?
I see the women's game growing and growing, and I see the future being that any child that wants to play will be able to play. I think that we still have a lot of barriers between male and females participating together, and I think as we're now finding that we have a lot more people coming to us who may be transgender or non-binary, it will be really interesting to see how sport in general kind of deals with that.
How does Eastern Cal folk deal with that situation?
Yeah, so within the Eastern Cal girls football team, we welcome trans men and trans women and non-binary. We every so often start going, okay, is our name representational? And, you know, that's an ongoing conversation. Nothing's fixed. And we will always carry on kind of thinking about that. It represents the history of our club, but then it's also about inclusivity and people knowing that they're welcome. Within grassroots sport, so within the casual league, again, trans people are welcome. It's not the FA stance. So that's another reason that longer term, we may not be able to stay affiliated with the FA. But, you know, for me as somebody who as a child, and let's say I was a child, not a girl or a boy, I was a child and I wanted to play and I couldn't. For me, the really important thing is that we create opportunities for people to be able to play in whatever way that they feel comfortable. And so going forward, what I hope is that some of these kind of boxes that we try and put people in will be taken away so that people are able to play in whatever way that they want to.
Do you think when people say that sport and football has the power to bring social change is exaggerated or about right?
It definitely can bring social change, but it's about what happens off the pitch as well as what's on the pitch. So it's that starting point. Yeah, I do believe it can bring social change, and I think it can be a really good force for good. And, you know, it's great fun. Like, you know, especially for me as being part of a team sport, there's that camaraderie. So, yeah, but it's also about being responsible in terms of thinking what out there isn't right, isn't fair, and how can we bring that about? So it's not just that you kind of blindly just turn up to football once a week and suddenly you're going to miraculously make some kind of change, you know? We have to make an effort to go outside of the immediacy of the sport that we're playing to then do other things as well, you know, whether it's campaigning and going on rallies, whether it's meeting people, whether it's another form of campaigning, there is other efforts you need to make alongside it.
Do you see a time when football will be more mixed in terms of men and women playing together?
I definitely think so in the grassroots side of the game. I'm not sure kind of once you get to a certain level whether I see that. It would be interesting whether that happens. But I see no reason within the grassroots side of the game that it can't be a mixed sport.
We've talked a lot about women playing football. Do you ever go and watch football at all? How do you feel about women in the football terraces, in the pub? Is that something that's increasing as well? Do you feel comfortable to do so?
So I personally haven't really been to men's games very much, but I have been to watch women's games. I feel quite comfortable watching, like in terms of when I say comfortable, I feel like I would feel quite intimidated in a massive terrace of like men watching a Premier League game. I know that for loads of people, it's an amazing experience. So I'm not like knocking it. It's just for me, I think I'd find it quite like overwhelming. But when I've been to watch women's games, I've been to watch the kind of England women's, like whether it's been like Ashton Gate, like the Lionesses, or whether it is like more of a kind of community team. Personally, I think the women's game like has a larger range of ages and of genders. So it feels like far more like a family kind of place. But I'm sure part of that is because it's affordable, you know, like the men's game, the elite side of the men's game is just, how much are tickets? I mean, they're bonkers. So, you know, it shuts loads of people out. So I feel like the women's game at the moment is a really accessible thing for people and affordable, and that's actually, I think, makes the women's game better.
Okay, that's football's future. What's the future hold for you, for Zoe Gibbons?
Oh, it's so sad. My body's giving up on me. Football keeps injuring me. So at the moment, there's a... Don't want to say it, but there's a walking football team. I shouldn't be so snobby about it. But I'm going to give it a go at doing a walking football. But also I'm planning to form a softball team. So like, I want to still play in a team sport, but I kind of thought that softball might be quite... And it's also mixed. I do really like playing mixed sport. I think that there's a really nice balance that you have from playing mixed sport. So yeah, so hopefully in the next month, we're going to start playing in a softball team to add to our array of Eastern Cow folk teams.
Zoe, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers.